This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. Hope you had a great weekend. What a beautiful Sunday, right? Saints pull out a win as well. LSU wins. Tulane loses a heartbreaker. They got robbed, in my view. I watched that game. I did not like the outcome of that. Really bad officiating from my perspective, but they played well. They really did. It was a good game, entertaining game. So I had a lot of fun over the weekend. Glad football is back. We've got a great lineup for you today. We're going to visit with J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member. We'll talk about a number of things that they passed this past Thursday relative to new regulations over water billing, aligning with local rules, with state laws meant to fix the sewage and water board, and some of the inaccurate billing system. We'll also talk about what actually stinks, literally, at City Hall, and we'll get the latest on that. We'll start the 12 o'clock hour with Jeff Nowak. We'll talk about the Saints' victory, big-time victory over the Carolina Panthers Sunday. Next up, Dallas Cowboys. They had a big win as well this past weekend, and we'll visit with him to find out, to do the after action on the game and find out as we prepare for the Dallas Cowboys. So last week there was a special committee hearing, judiciary committee, about these post-conviction relief releases being made by the DA, Jason Williams. We're going to have Laura Rodri, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears, former Orleans prosecutor. She testified before the committee, and she laid out some horrific examples of cases where the district attorney's office is substituting their judgment for that of not only the district court, the appellate court, in some cases the Louisiana Supreme Court, and in other cases the U.S. Supreme Court as well. And releasing individuals, murderers, where victims' families said they were opposed. The interesting thing, no new evidence. So what's up with that? We'll go through a number of cases in a slide presentation that was done by Ms. Rodrigue for the benefit of the committee. I watched some of that testimony. The committee was shocked to hear what was going on in these cases. And we've yet to have a reasonable explanation. They were so shocked, in fact, that they requested that the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office, Emily Ma, who used to be head of an activist group that advocated for releases of inmates, the Innocence Project, is now on the other side, working inside of the state system trying to get individuals released. Very interesting dynamic. We'll visit with Darlene Cassands in the back half of this hour. As it relates to these school shootings, they've been running a program for a long time. I embraced this program as sheriff, as chief deputy. Sheriff Harry Lee embraced it. A lot of what they do in providing an outlet for safe schools. And we'll talk about that. That program's alive and well, and we'll visit with Darlene Cassanza. You know, it seems as though I end up talking about this topic a lot, and it's because there seems to always be breaking news, because there's always misdirection. There's always deflection and evasion, and they're just out-and-out lies. I mean, it just never ceases to amaze me what the Biden-Harris administration, these lengths that they will go to mislead the general public, especially when it comes to immigration. So you heard me talk about this special parole program that they had set up for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans. You've probably seen the stories of the Venezuelan gang members and some of the havoc that they're wreaking in a number of cities across this country. Well, the way that this works is that you're allowed to come into the country if there's a sponsor for you. You do not have a visa to come in. You have no legal way to come in. So they've created this parole program. This program, as I reported to you earlier, has been overwhelmed by fraud. And if you recall, last week I told you that they were trying to restart this program in a very hurried way. They had claimed that they had resolved some of the issues that they were challenged with before, but not so fast. Michael Mayhew, head of the Immigration Records and Identity Services Division at the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, he's a government employee, he issued a 23-page internal audit. And he outlines, he makes 40 recommendations to prevent fraud. It seems as though a lot of what they claimed to have resolved has yet to be resolved. It's so bad that one of the folks that was trying to gain entry into this country through this program actually filed an application using the passport number of the former First Lady, Michelle Obama. There's no one immune from the fraudulent activities of what's going on here. It is a joke. And they just continue to try and push this program forward because what's happening is that they're not crossing in between the ports of entry because of this program. And in fact, one of the main reasons that was uncovered during the audit for reinstituting this is that the U.S. government has basically said the U.S. government has been under pressure from Mexico because there are tens of thousands of migrants who are massed in camps waiting for a chance to cross into the U.S. under this program. And they're basically telling the U.S. government, you either do something or we're going to let these people go. There is an unserious sense of urgency to restart this program when serious flaws still exist. So what is happening is they're afraid if they don't start this program again, you're going to have the drones flying in between the ports of entry showing you all of the horrific views that we've grown so accustomed to seeing that they've been able to move that blister to the ports of entry by creating these exotic, so no other way to refer to it, other than an exotic program to allow folks in. There have been 2.7 million applications have been submitted as of July. There's a 2 million case backlog, which equates to more than 5 years of work, and the applications are streaming in at a rate of 90,000 a month, three times the cap of 30,000 that's allowed under the program. So they're getting it. I'll tell you how much they're getting it. You have Venezuelans and Cubans and Haitians and Nicaraguans now because they expanded the program to include Ukrainians. And because Ukrainians don't have the 30,000 cap, the others have figured out a way to exploit the system. They wave the magic wand. You were born a Cuban. You were born a Haitian. You were born a Venezuelan. You were born a Nicaraguan. You are now Ukrainian. And they're coming into the country. There have been some changes that they've attempted to do, but they don't really work. And Mr. Mayhew's audit said that the USCIS updated its system to require a criminal record check every 180 days. But given the backlog, the danger was that the applications were lingering and the applicants could have amassed criminal records between the time they filed and they were reviewed. You think? Unbelievable what's going on at the border. $5,000, great business to be in. You want to sponsor someone? Never really taken any account for them. $5,000. So Mr. Mayhew, who conducted the audit, he made some observations, and they are as follows. People selling sponsorships on social media to migrants with whom they had no connection. That included applications filed in the names of legitimate U.S. citizens whose identities were stolen. That's how they ended up using Michelle Obama's passport number. Nearly 1,000 applications approved with Social Security numbers of dead people. Thousands of applications with bogus addresses, badly designed systems and not enough staffing, and those who are working cases aren't trained to spot fraud. One source said the White House didn't want stiffer checks on the sponsors because it didn't want to disincentivize people from signing up. Are you kidding me? Mr. Mayhew, the auditor, also said reviewers were surprised, as I just pointed out, when they saw Haitians and others submitting applications claiming to be Ukrainian. Of course, the Venezuelans, the Cubans, they followed suit. And he said they figured out that they were all part of that $30,000 per month cap. There was no cap on Ukrainians, right? This is becoming very problematic for the reviewers, as the ones processing the Ukraine queue are not realizing the scheme and confirming a Cuban, Haitians, Venezuelans, beneficiaries, and they're marked up as Ukrainian. We don't know who's coming into this country. We can't even figure out their origin country, much less who they are. And if any of these people can stand before you with a straight face and say there is not chaos at the border and that they have control and they know who's coming into this country, they are lying. Lying. Their own auditors within these organizations are pointing out this very fact. So don't buy it. And if you think it's going to change, it's not. Because they'll do this during an election season. They've set up this situation where they're trafficking human beings for large sums of money, abusing their flim-flam exotic program that they're putting into place that are accomplishing nothing. And when you go back to Kamala Harris's foreign policy work in Central America, you know, the root cause. She's no longer the czar. She's the root cause person. What we're finding is that China's coming on the heels of whatever she attempted to do in these nations in the Northern Triangle and making better deals. And guess what? They're not only taking our money, they're taking their money too. But their money equates to about five times what we're offering. So who do you think they're ultimately being very beholden to? All the while, we're creating special programs to take their citizens into our country. Connect those dots for me and tell me that it makes any sense at all. But we all really know what this is about, right? We're in an election season. And who would have thought that the truth of what is being done would have been revealed by a fellow Democrat, Bernie Sanders? So Bernie Sanders was on Meet the Press with the hostess, Kristen Welker. And Kristen Welker says to Bernie, you know, Bernie, you guys have labeled Kamala Harris as a progressive. She's taken a stand of Medicaid for all. Now she says she's no longer for that. Banning fracking, she was for that. She now says that she's no longer on that. And she reminds the senator that you have campaigned extensively on these issues. These are the cornerstones of your platform that you always talked about, you know, that Kamala Harris was right there with you. So she asks, she goes, do you think Kamala is abandoning her progressive ideals? And he says, no, I don't think she is abandoning her ideals. I think she is trying to be pragmatic and do what she thinks is right in order to win the election. Let me say that again. I think she's trying to be pragmatic and do what she thinks is right in order to win the election. That's code for she'll say anything she needs to say in order to garner the votes, in order to get elected. It doesn't mean if it violates her values, her previous policy positions, or otherwise. And you're never going to actually know what she's thinking, because she's only telling you what she thinks you want to hear come from her lips. Plain and simple. I don't know if Bernie realized what he just said, but he just threw her under the bus. He just told the world that she will do or say anything in order to get elected. What value system? What truth? What transparency? Maybe that's the hesitation to sit down, to be held accountable, to try and explain away what changed as it relates to fracking. Is there some new technology? That was the death knell of the environment. Anything new on that forefront that makes it more satisfactory to the environmentalists? Is there a change of heart? How did this happen? We all know how it happened. She can't afford to lose Pennsylvania, so we changed the issue. Medicare for all. Didn't do well for the last time, right? Same thing. That's why she's changed on that. And Bernie called her out, whether he realizes it or not. She will do what she thinks is right in order to win the election. She will place herself on the right side of the issue to garner the most votes possible. Damn the torpedoes. Doesn't matter where I was before. And it ain't going to much matter where I'm going to be in the future once you vote yes for Kamala and she ends up in the White House. And maybe then and only then we may find out where she ultimately stands. But I think she'll take a playbook out of the Barack Obama playbook, because there were a lot of things that Barack Obama did not do in his first 4 years of his term that he did in the second 4 years. So, for example, he was one of the toughest presidents on immigration in the first 4 years. In the second 4 years, he did a 180, a complete 180. Almost within days after being reelected, his whole attitude changed. And he effectively redesigned the landscape of immigration through executive orders and executive actions to become more restrictive as to what law enforcement would do. There were a lot of task forces that were federal, state, and local working together, being very successful under the first 4 years of Obama. The second 4 years, done, over with. Because now we had to do what we thought was right in order to win the election. Now, of course, he's not running again, right? But he had to make sure that whoever was going to run would get elected, and that policy changed. And that's just one example. It's relevant to this discussion. There's so many others where they changed. So you're not ever going to really know where this person is going to stand on any of these issues. And her co-author of a lot of these bills that she's now flipped positions on, not only did she state a position, she co-authored the bill that was introduced in Congress. Now, I don't know about you, But I don't really much care to be to have the leader of this country be the individual who files bills advocating for a change in our views, our policies, and in our values, who within a short period of time, years, will contradict herself only for the sake of an election. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Folks, we know about a number of the horrific shootings that take place on school campuses across the country. There are a lot of things that can be done in the collection of intelligence data in a bunch of different ways. And there's been a program, actually, that was started here by Crime Stoppers many, many years ago, I think dating back to 2004, if my memory serves me correct, that has, I can honestly say, provided information to the JPSO on many occasions where we were able to get intrusive, get curious about certain things that were going on school campuses throughout Jefferson Parish and disrupt things that were about to happen. And Darlene Cassanza, president and CEO of Crime Stoppers, joins us. Darlene, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil, for having us.
So, Darlene, the Safe School Hotline, it's been around a while. For the benefit of listening audience, why don't you explain how this works?
Absolutely. So our program, and it actually started after a shooting at John McDonough High School in New Orleans, allows not only students, but families, you know, the faculty, whoever is involved in the school community, to report information they know, and it's done through the Crime Stoppers process, which means it's always done anonymously. And back in the day, we had a telephone, and then we did text a tip. You know, today, really, what we're using is a mobile app, a free app. It's called Safe Schools Louisiana, and kids can download that and send any information. They can upload photos, voice recordings. I mean, obviously, we get a lot of information they're getting from social media posts. But all of this is done real-time, where we're looking at it through our answering service 24/7 and vetting the information to the teams that it needs to go to. And you're right, Noel. I mean, we have processed thousands of tips through this particular process. And what we're excited about is the fact that, you know, this is about preventing crimes before they happen, but it's also about giving voices to people who want to have a voice, which is our students. And it's incredible to see how happy they are when they know that their information has been looked at and taken seriously, you know, by the administrators or whoever the information needs to go down to.
In some cases, I recall, you correct me if I'm wrong, there were, you know, kids were not really trusting sometimes of administration. In many cases, they didn't feel like the information that they desired to provide was taken seriously. And that changed in a pretty quick fashion, if my memory serves me correct, with the Safe School Hotline. Because law enforcement was able to vet some of that information, do some background with it before they ever went to the administration. And I know in our case, when we went to the administration, they took it seriously.
Well, definitely. I guess there's two components to that. First off, with Crime Stoppers, we've always put the students first. So when you look at the Safe Schools information, it's, you know, even the logo was created by students. We have a student leadership program called our Teen Ambassadors Against Crime, and those kids were very much involved when we first started this, giving us the language, you know, appearing in our PSAs, appearing in our training videos, so that students feel that it's someone like a peer, someone that they would recognize, passing on this information about how you can get involved. But certainly, everything that comes back to us to participate in this program, we have to have, from the school side, a multidisciplinary team. And that team has to consist of someone from law enforcement. Because obviously there's information that comes to us that's law enforcement in nature that they would need to investigate versus just the school system. The other person that's very important, because we've seen a shift in the type of tips receiving, is that the school team has to include counseling. So a lead counselor, someone on the behavioral health side, so that if we get the information that we see, you know, that somebody is, you know, threatening self-harm, we want to make sure that not only does law enforcement, if it's a first person reporting that and it's, you know, it's an imminent concern, law enforcement is going to go out and do a welfare check or a wellness check. But we need to follow that up on the school level so that when we have the counseling side of this, they can follow up with the student and their family and make sure that the services that are needed is being provided. So, I mean, I think when kids see that, when they know that they've sent a tip and they see their friend getting help, it's that circle. It's, you know, that shows that, yes, we are taking you seriously. We want to make sure that you're comfortable through this process and that you see a result.
Darlene, we know that there's been, in a lot of cases, a connection between a student and criminal actor, not just shootings, but acting out in criminal conduct on school campuses with bullying. And I know that you guys historically have received a lot of information about cases of that going on as well, right?
Well, bullying certainly, I mean, in most school shootings, when you look at, you go back and you read the text about what possibly led up to that, there's a lot of times the alleged perception of bullying, and or certainly can be proven that the child was bullied, and there's abuse. And a lot of times there's abuse behind that. And for us, when we see the tips coming through to us, definitely bullying can be simple things that we don't, you know, as adults, we're like, oh, that was just, you know, I got excluded from something. But it goes on over time, and it can lead to other more extreme, whether it's criminal behavior or other behavior where it could lead to self-harm. So we take the incidence of bullying very seriously. And actually, in the state of Louisiana, I mean, there's guidelines for schools to follow with information that's, you know, how they're handling bullying information coming into their schools. There was a new law passed last year where there's a safe school center through the Governor's Office of Homeland Security. So schools have to have a reporting process like a Crime Stoppers anonymous reporting app, and they have to have other services in place. All of that goes back to, like you say, the bullying incidents. I mean, whether somebody's coming in and going to do something and threatening another student that becomes a criminal nature, you know, the school has to be able to interact with that, and kids need to be able to report with that. So see it, you see something, say something. It's been the motto. We're say it here is our motto. It all goes back to what is the power of the person who's witnessing this able to do with what they see.
Yeah, there's no doubt that information is power. There's also no doubt that what goes on in and around a school campus is just representative of what's going on in a community at large. It's not like you walk on a school campus and everyone is completely sanitized of everything that's going on outside the campus, right?
No, absolutely. And I know for me, when I first started doing this, and I've been doing this for a while, I was amazed at the information that we would gather through students on adult crimes. And, you know, people who are on the most wanted by a certain law enforcement agency for committing either murders or, you know, some type of very violent act. Students had information. I mean, whether that was somebody they knew from their neighborhood, whether that was somebody that was part of their family, they would share that information because I think most students want to be able to do the right thing. And they're not, it's not an isolated incident where they're not seeing this. If they're walking to school and they're seeing drug deals happening a block away, or, you know, other types of activity happening very close to the school community, it does get brought into the school community. So for us, with that multidisciplinary team approach, if it's meant to be a law enforcement concern, you know, like going to investigate the drug dealing outside of the school grounds, you know, that's what's so helpful because we have that tree already made, the branches of those trees already made through our community program.
So, I know you continue to work with the schools. Has much changed since 2004 relative? I mean, other than the manner in which they're communicating it. I mean, I know the social networks are much more alive and well today than they were then. But anything else?
Well, certainly for us, two things have changed. I'll start with the type of tips. You know, back in the day when we first started, we were getting a lot of, oh, there's going to be a fight on campus. There was drugs being sold. You know, you would get some bullying. We weren't getting the mental health concerns. And really, after COVID, we saw a huge increase in that changing with the landscape of the student population. We all have gone through with COVID, correct?
Sure.
So we've
Absolutely.
Seen a lot more mental health issues that the kids are dealing with. We're seeing tips about not only self-harm, suicide threats. We're seeing tips about abuse, dating abuse, or abuse within a family that a friend is recognizing and noticing. So it's a shame that we're having to see, you know, to change where we are, and that's where the counseling aspect of having that team member present is so important, because our kids are struggling. And then the other thing that changed for us is, you know, we started in New Orleans, we went through our 9 parishes, and then in 2020 we went statewide. So with the state police first, and now we're under GOSEP. We're now in close to 653 schools, I believe. We'll be about 700 schools very shortly. So what we've seen with that is certainly there's a little bit of a difference in the types of tips that are coming in from the different parts of the state. But overall, the mental health is definitely, we're seeing that aspect increasing.
And the beauty of this is it gives a conduit for the student to do it anonymously. You know, students are very aware. So when they see somebody walking into the principal or the disciplinarian's office or whatever, and then they see remedial action being taken in the immediate aftermath of someone walking in, they start asking questions. I know you're aware of that. You've probably heard stories about it. I have as well. The beauty of this is it creates degrees of separation where no one really knows where the information is coming from, right?
Absolutely. And for us, I mean, being Crime Stoppers, you know, we actually have a privileged information statute. So everything we have done historically as an organization, and this is not just here in Louisiana, this is across the United States and actually abroad, it's done through that lens. So we're able to make sure that the information is kept anonymous, and that students can rest assured that, one, it's going to be processed anonymously. They're going to be processed through a tip number, which is what we do in our adult program. But they're also able to follow back up with us. And we are looking for a disposition on the information. So it doesn't just fall into the, you know, tunnel and nobody ever looks at it. Somebody's absolutely vetting that information for them. And that's why I always say it's so important for what we do compared to just like a, you know, a text a tip and or send an email. We're looking at this 24/7. We have trained operators looking at this information 24/7. So when something comes in for us, if a student's going to report something that they heard may happen overnight, someone overnight on the administrative side, whether it's law enforcement or school, is going to be getting that information. It's not going to be held right till the next day when the door, you know, damage could be done. So definitely seeing that and knowing that kids know that there is something happening is incredibly important. And they have two-way dialogue that they could actually dialogue with us.
So if grandparents, parents, other concerned citizens want to spread the word, where would they go to learn more about Safe Schools?
They can go to SafeSchoolsLouisiana.com is the website, or they can come to CrimeStoppersGNO.org, which would link you over to Safe Schools Louisiana. Right now, this is a free program that is sponsored by the state, so we encourage any school that doesn't have this opportunity to have an anonymous reporting hotline that's answered 24/7. You know, please take advantage of this. There's, you know, no reasons why they shouldn't.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the great work that y'all do. Darlene Cassandra, President and CEO of Crime Stoppers. Have a great week.
Thank you.
We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So I got a lot of texts coming in, you know, about who I should debate on this issue of immigration and this and that and changing positions. And Donald Trump does it as well and this. And yeah, they all do. But this is the primary difference. So now if you go to Kamala Harris's website, she actually has some policy positions out there, right? And she says that she's going to secure our borders and fix our broken immigration system. Really? Well, you just heard what I said in my monologue about they implemented a system that is just riddled with fraud. So they pause it. Then they come back and claim they've fixed it. And then their own internal auditor says, not so fast, Kamala. It ain't fixed. And in fact, in many cases, it's worse. So the question is, Donald Trump's not an elected official. She is. She's sitting in an office that she was given the authority to participate in this silo, immigration, and make it better. And the data that's being provided by their own administration, I know that drives Democrats crazy, This is not some conservative think tank or others that are putting forward this information. This is their own internal auditors, their own data collectors that are saying, Houston, we have a problem. It is not working. But she's committed as the candidate for president, as the vice president, that she's going to secure our borders and fix our broken immigration system. Really? You had that authority to do it. You're living it now. You've implemented programs that are not working. Why would we have much confidence in you in the future if what you've deployed strategically, programmatically, and otherwise is not working? And in fact, is making it worse. See, folks, that's the difference. Everyone wants to jump on this pro-Trump. This isn't pro-Trump. This is about about governance, about having the ability to govern. You have a live science project going on right now in front of you on all of these issues. But of course, when she takes off the VP hat and puts on the president hat, everything is going to be different, right? It's all going to be different, whether she was the last person in the room or not, or the first person on the call the other day. It's amazing they want it both ways. That she's involved in the governance, but when it goes to hell in a handbasket, she always has multiple degrees of separation. Doesn't work that way. We'll be right back. Can you imagine starting a program about a year and a half ago that's already got a 5-year backlog? Really? That's going to make the situation better? When we come back, we're going to visit with Laura Rodri, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears, former Orleans prosecutor. We'll do the follow-up on the testimony given to the Judiciary Committee in Baton Rouge about these post-conviction relief cases. So I got a lot of texts coming in, you know, about who I should debate on this issue of immigration and this and that and changing positions, and Donald Trump does it as well and this. And yeah, they all do. But this is the primary difference. So now if you go to Kamala Harris's website, she actually has some policy positions out there, right? And she says that she's going to secure our borders and fix our broken immigration system. Really? Well, you just heard what I said in my monologue about they implemented a system that is just riddled with fraud. So they pause it. Then they come back and claim they've fixed it. And then their own internal auditor says, not so fast, Kamala. It ain't fixed. And in fact, in many cases, it's worse. So the question is, Donald Trump's not an elected official. She is. She's sitting in an office that she was given the authority to participate in this silo, immigration, and make it better. And the data that's being provided by their own administration, I know that drives Democrats crazy. This is not some conservative think tank or others that are putting forward this information. This is their own internal auditors, their own data collectors that are saying, Houston, we have a problem. It is not working. But she's committed as the candidate for president, as the vice president, that she's going to secure our borders and fix our broken immigration system. Really? You had that authority to do it. You're living it now. You've implemented programs that are not working. Why would we have much confidence in you in the future if what you've deployed strategically, programmatically, and otherwise is not working? And in fact, is making it worse. See, folks, that's the difference. Everyone wants to jump on this pro-Trump. This isn't pro-Trump. This is about about governance, about having the ability to govern. You have a live science project going on right now in front of you on all of these issues. But, of course, when she takes off the VP hat and puts on the president hat, everything is going to be different, right? It's all going to be different, whether she was the last person in the room or not, or the first person on the call the other day. It's amazing they want it both ways. That she's involved in the governance, but when it goes to hell in a handbasket, she always has multiple degrees of separation. Doesn't work that way. We'll be right back. Can you imagine starting a program about a year and a half ago that's already got a 5-year backlog? Really? That's going to make the situation better? When we come back, we're going to visit with Laura Rodri, co-founder of Bayou Mama Bears, former Orleans prosecutor. We'll do the follow-up on the testimony given to the Judiciary Committee in Baton Rouge about these post-conviction relief cases.